Hey there, Thomas Matt is here, host of Thomas's Prerogative over at the Shaft Podcast. I'm here to announce the Shaft Podcast fun, exciting events that we're bringing to the Metrocon convention. What's Metrocon, you may ask? Well, Metrocon is the largest anime convention in Florida, and the Shaft Podcast is proud to bring four exciting panels that we'll be bringing to Metrocon, hosted by yours truly. Now, what are these panels? Well, let me tell you. First, on Friday at 5 p.m. in Room 19, you have Evolution in American Anime, where I will explain to you how American animation had a hand in the creation of anime, and how anime now in turn has come and influenced American animation. The next panel will be later that night at Room 13/14, a special event called Anime Theater Live, where we'll take a movie and riff on it. That's right, you a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000 or riff tracks? This is the event for you, because we will be riffing on a movie, and you know what? If you say a good line that makes everybody laugh, we will give you a prize. It'll be anything from an anime DVD to manga to many other prizes we'll have with us. Our next event will take the very next day on Saturday in Room 18. It will be Thomas's Prerogative Live. Yes, I will be giving my unbiased opinion upon the state of the anime industry. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not going to be pretty. And then finally on Sunday, we will have another presentation, Anime and New Media. If you want to know where you can find your very favorite anime on the internet, or try to find where you can unite with fans on the internet as well, we'll tell you how to get there. So come down to Metrocon from July 23rd to July 25th and join us in our four exciting panels that the Shaft Podcast presents. You can find Metrocon by going to www.metroconventions.com, and you can also find the Shaft Podcast by going to www.animeshaft.com. So, until July, folks, peace! Dear Spider-Man fans, welcome to a brand new episode of the Spectacular Webs Podcast, the only podcast on the web dedicated to the Spectacular Spider-Man animation series. Today, we will be covering episode 11, which is entitled Group Therapy. Now, of course, I am your one and only Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And, of course, I'm here with my PIC, partner in crime, Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how are you doing tonight?
Hello! Hi. How you doing?
So, we did not review, or should I say, why am I talking about review? It's going to, again, be one of those nights. How delightful. But we did not receive any iTunes or emails, but we did get a couple of responses on our forum space. So we got one for the Ask Question and one actually for our episode, which we actually released earlier this week. First we're going to talk or ask the question thread from Spiderpool 279. He says, I'm back! Great. So what he's basically saying is he's Dennis Quaid's kind of talented brother that blows himself up in Independence Day. Moving on. That's a long way I went for Independence Day reference, but I just listened to episode 9, so that means it's Tyler time. Oh, great.
Good. I like Tyler time.
I wish I had a reference there. But my question for both of you is, I'm asking you to read off a list of all the podcasts you listen to, please. He had something else, but I'm just not going to mention that, or I'm just going to go all Hulk. But, Sedan, do you want to list your podcasts off first?
Well, I'll say first and foremost that I know Tyler does a Deadpool podcast, which I think he's baiting us to say we listen to. I don't listen
Mercs
to it.
Mercs and Mutants. It's actually hosted, I believe, by his good friend Matthew, and he sometimes guest stars on it. It's pretty decent.
Oh, so you've listened to it.
Yeah, I've listened to it. I'm not a big Deadpool or Cable fan, which is what the podcast is about, but...
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't listen to it out of like any vitriol or anything. I just it doesn't interest me. But you know, one of these days I'll get to it. I listen to a lot of shows. Pretty much 99% of the shows I listen to are comic book related. The only one I don't listen to that's comic related is a show called For Your Ears Only. It's a James Bond podcast. It's done by two genuine British people, Ian Wilson and Adam Fisher. And actually, tomorrow is their very last episode because they go over all the movies, and tomorrow is their last one, so I'm going to be very sad. But that's an awesome show. I listen to the Batman Universe. I listen to Batgirl Oracle, Comic Timing, Geeks Unite Network, Comic Tube, DJ Comics Cavalcade, Better in the Dark, Spider-Man Crawl Space, of course, Views from the Long Box, and, well, I also listen to shows I'm on just to hear back. So I listen to Clone Saga Chronicles, ASM Classics, and, of course, Spec Webs. I believe that's it.
Me, of course, there's Tutu Freaks Podcast Network. There's Thomas's DJ Podcasting Network, which has things like Better in the Dark, DJ Thomas's Comic Cavalcade, which I'm sure I messed that up somehow. Again, I prove I'm a Southerner.
On the other side of the South, DJ Comics Cavalcade by Thomas DJ.
Two in One Showcase, you know, I've listened for a long time. Go back and listen to their, I would say their Warner Brother episodes and their 90s and 80s animation episodes. Those are three of my favorites. I actually got a letter actually answered on their, I believe it was their Dracula episode. Which is awesome, where I talked about that. They also did, for people who are not anime fans, you know, they somewhat admit that, they did one damn good anime podcast, or anime episode, excuse me.
Anime!
Yeah, they talked about it, they talked about Wide Ride, I mean, they talked about Voltron, they talked about Battle Royale, they actually talked about Negima, which is actually one of my favorite mangas, so... I mean, they were primarily just talking the comic books, but it's a really, really good episode. Speaking of anime, I listen to many anime podcasts. Most of them you can find on the Digital Dysfunction Network, which you can find at addnetwork.net. started by my friends who run the Shaft podcast, and so they use it to showcase other anime podcasts. Again, a lot of ones you said, Stella's podcast, the Barbara Gordon podcast, A Clone Saga Chronicles, Spider-Man Crawl Space, Views from the Long Box, and every other of the 500 other podcasts Michael Bailey does.
Also, Burning Comics with Walter Bonham, which is kind of a new one. He's been out for like maybe a few months, but I kind of pick and choose now because he's done a lot.
You mean he's been out for 3 months and he has 700 podcast episodes out? Excuse me.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. One which we'll be actually talking about a little bit later. But, you know, overall, that's it. So, I hope you enjoyed our list. The other thing I wanted to tackle is we actually got a response for our episode, which we released all this past week. And the reason I bring it up is he talked about our Women in Comics discussion getting off topic. This is from Chaos.
And it was. I'm not gonna deny that.
Well, it was from a person by the name of Chaos Inc., and I thank him for writing in. And yeah, we were pretty off topic, and just to go behind the scenes of why we were off topic, we did not prepare for Women in Comics. We actually prepared for a different subject altogether, and forgot about the subject that we were covering. Me and Don had been for the past couple weeks actually, or should I say for the past week leading up to that recording, having not heated, but very thorough discussions about fan service. And so we were sort of preparing to talk about fan service in that episode, and then we realized, oh wait, no, it's not fan service we should have prepared for, it's women in comics. Oh shoot.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I think that we had hyped in episode 9, we're going to talk about women comics. And then we got into this whole fan service debate, just between us guys. And then by the time we got to the discussion, our minds were kind of fried with all the talk of boobs and ass and everything.
My mind wasn't fried with about boobs and butts, but it was on a different subject. But overall, so thank you, Chaos Inc., for that comment. We really appreciate it. And thank you for anybody who sends us comments. So let's move on to the mainstay, and let's have Donovan give us a little recap of episode 11, Group Therapy.
Yes, Group Therapy. Episode 11, this highlights the Sinister Six. Episode begins with Max Dillon being released from Ravencroft? Yeah, apparently he served his time, and he's had a lot of psychoanalytic therapy. So we're introduced to Ashley Kafka for the first time, and she says, "Oh, I'm sure you'll be going to society." And he's like, "Okay, cool."
And I'm sure
he can call Dr. Octopus.
And yeah, I'm sure he'll never hurt anybody again.
Yeah, you think that from the confidence she's pouring, but obviously they didn't really do that good of a job. Basically, what happens from here is that through a call from Dr. Octopus and through machinations of Hammerhead...
And an absolute horrible line, which I think anybody who constantly has a dirty mind will have second thoughts about that line.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He says, yes, I can't wait to double-team Spider-Man. Oh, surely we can do better than that.
Well, folks, leave it up to your dirty imaginations to find out if he's right or wrong.
But our group of listeners probably, that's the one, wow, the people who are probably watching this, they have to be laughing. But moving on.
Okay. Dr. Octopus, the Vulture, and Montana, Fancy Dan, Ox, Rhino, and Sandman are all broken out of Rikers Island prison.
Next time on the next season of Prison Break, only on Fox.
You're watching Fox.
Where shows are canceled.
Yeah, Hammerhead shows up with a helicopter. He splits. He pretty much pairs everybody off. He takes away Fancy Dan and Ox, and splits everybody off into their own group, and says that they're going to be the new supervillain team to kill Spider-Man. After the opening credits, we cut back to Peter running into Eddie. And Eddie is still very upset about the last episode where he found out that Peter took pictures of the alien symbiote as it was being stolen. And he's wearing a black bike motorcycle jacket with a white V on it. Oh, that's not. Can you feel the analogy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll get into my thoughts about that a little bit later.
As will I. As Spider-Man is thinking, what kind of sucks? But who needs? I have this wonderful suit. The Sinister Six are tearing up Times Square. And when Spider-Man gets there, he pretty much gets trashed.
A humana comes to mind.
Yeah. He is beaten up, but as before the fight actually starts, he helps Aunt May and Anna Watson into the theater they were going to see because they were going there to see a theater. And as the fight starts to happen, Aunt May actually has a heart attack, so she collapses. And while this is going on, Spider-Man actually retreats. He actually says, even with the symbiote, I can't beat these guys. So he escapes, and the six are all, the six by this point are now wanting to their individual goals, but they still say, we gotta kill Spider-Man to make our lives complete. This time, Peter goes back to his house in Queens, Forest Hills, and he decides to take a nap because he's so tired and says he'll fight the six in an hour's time. So he takes a nap, and at this point, it's 8 p.m. At 9 p.m., the Black Symbiote actually gets on him, and you see Spider-Man wake up and swing downtown and fight the Sinister Six.
Actually, to hold up a second, I don't know it's that he said he'll fight them in an hour time. It's that he'll wake up to make sure Aunt May is home safe in an hour's time. Because if you remember, he wakes up later in the show, And I was like, oh, I totally forgot to, you know, wake up in time for to catch Aunt May getting home.
I think it was both. I think you did mention, I know what you're talking about with the Aunt May thing. He said that, you know, we gotta get the woman's cell phone and everything. But I also think that he says, I'll get back up in an hour and tackle them again. I think he said something like that, but whatever. the point is, Spider-Man goes back downtown and takes on the Six, but he's not saying anything, weirdly enough. There's a lengthy battle sequence that follows, but in the middle of this,
freaking awesome.
Oh yeah. No, we'll get into it. Don't worry. In the middle of this, though, we have to talk about Eddie. Apparently, he's going out with Mary Jane, which is a funny thing to say. Eddie's driving a motorcycle, and MJ is like, you know, behind him, or she's like, you know, she's on the motorcycle behind him. And he gives him the backstory of his parents and Peter's parents and how they were scientists, their fathers were scientists and their moms were BFFs, and they all died in the same plane crash. Eddie says for this reason, he was always Peter Parker's, like, his almost his older brother. He always looked out for him. He always was there for him. And that pretty much says in his mind why he's so disgusted with how Peter's been acting. But as he says this, he drives a lot recklessly and even endangering in Mary Jane's life. So Mary Jane's like, you know, stop the thing right now. She says, you know, whatever Peter's going through, he's twice the man you'll ever be, which...
Yes!
Yes. back of the fight, Spider-Man, I mean, I'm not going to go into the specifics, but Spider-Man basically takes down all the members of the Six except for Dr. Octopus. And once he gets a lucky punch on Dr. Octopus, he almost impales him with his own tentacles, which is awesome. But as the cops come, he flees away. 5 o'clock in the morning, Peter wakes up and notices that he has bruises on his arm. And like, I don't remember that. And so we find out that the entire time Spider-Man was fighting, Peter wasn't actually awake. The symbiote was using his body to carry out the battle and pretty much used his body as almost like a car. And he even took pictures and sold them to the Beagle. At first, Peter's like, you know, this is really jacked up. But then he's like, well, who cares? Parker gets paid for the photos. The Six are taken down. What's the difference? So he's like, you know, this is actually pretty cool. And then Mary Jane comes in and says, she says, Peter, don't you know what happened to your Aunt May? She says, Peter still thinks she's sleeping, which I think is really sad. But she says, no, she had a heart attack. She's in the hospital. And Peter has a very badly animated, delayed reaction to this. But he's like, as the episode ends. So thoughts on this episode?
Well, I think you can split this episode really that it falls into two parts. You have the Sinister Six fight, and then you have all the stuff that's basically setting up the next two episodes. And also the last two episodes of the arc, the last two episodes of the season. They're basically all just set up for the next two episodes. And overall, I loved it.
Yeah, I really liked it. I liked... it's interesting that the idea kind of that I see is... Spidey at this point couldn't beat the Six unless he had the symbiote, which I think is kind of interesting, especially since, you know, this is the second time he's fought pretty much any of these villains. And when they're all together, they know how to... They when he took on the Vulture upgraded his technology, so it's not as easy, and it just provides more challenge. It provides interesting ways for a fight. And this episode is great.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Let's start with music. I have actually three musical things to talk about. First, let's talk about the breakout music for the Prison Break. It seemed like it had its own unique theme. It had sort of a rock track, but it had this sort of subtle undertone, dun, 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 you know, not necessarily that beat, but the tones that you might hear with any other sort of Jailbreak sequence. To be honest, really, so you had that, but obviously Don didn't notice it. But one thing I do want to talk about is the sort of little sad reprisal theme that you hear. It's right after Peter comes back from the Times Square fight, and he's laying down, and of course it goes down the steps, and the answering machine gets on talking about Aunt May's heart attack. And there's this just beautiful little reprisal that I thought fit just perfectly.
I know what you're talking about, and it was really nice, because... you have a panoramic shot of their house, and it really allows the music, with no dialogue, it really allows the music to set the tone. And I think the entire the whole idea, because like, you know how Peter is always worried about Aunt May in the comic books.
Yeah.
The whole idea of Peter thinking she's fine when she really isn't, actually had a heart attack. That's actually some really good story stuff, and it's driven home in that scene by the music. I actually have an animation note about that scene, but we'll get to that when we talk about animation.
Okay. And there's the Sinister Six fight music, which I found just awesome. It fit the scene. It was so upbeat. It fit the action so perfectly.
It was good.
With that, let's move on to animation. Let's talk about the jail in Central Park, which I mean, we've sort of seen Central Park, but not really, and so this is really.
When have we seen Central Park before? I'm just asking. When have we seen Central Park before?
The last episode, when the plane was crashing, it was crashing in Central Park.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, for a brief minute.
Yeah, but this is the first time we've really been in Central Park, and of course you have the jail that they broke out of.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice the Osborn logo on Sandman's cell?
No, I did not. I really didn't.
Yeah, because don't you remember the cells were created by Osborn? You know,
I thought that was next season.
No. Remember, what episode was it? I think it was not episode 6, but possibly episode 7.
Are you talking about when Osborn told Hammerhead that, you know, now like defense. Like, state defense contracts have been given to him to keep the villains in line. Is that something? Is that what you want to say?
No. He talks about where Hammerhead's talking. You know, it is the one where Hammerhead's talking to him, but he's saying that, you know, you get him going and you get him leaving and coming. Where Osborn Industries has been contracted to specifically build the cells for Rhino and Sandman.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah,
okay, well, that's cool. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I mean they have where Osborn is on the glass, so I thought that was really cool to keep with the continuity that was said earlier in the season. I enjoyed the jail. I mean, we'll see it in later episodes.
Right. I think it's like the second to last episode, actually. But yeah, I liked it. I think the animation in this episode was just top-notch. I thought that, especially with the fight scene, like, the fluidity of all, and the realistic naturalism, all the body language, just made this just a joy to watch all over. Like, every single person, the way everybody moved, the way all the energy was flowing and everything, I thought it was just great. I thought it was, like, really, really, really good, and it's not always like that, so I was really happy to see it here in a kind of a brawl episode.
Yeah, I thought the fluidity of the fight scenes, you know, to repeat what you're saying, it was perfect. Let's move on to our final talking point with animation. Let's talk about the dark tones about the arc, and if you want to bring in your talk about that little reprisal scene, you can.
Well, like, it's just, I think you'll need the DVD to spot this, because I could pause at any time, because when you pan down to like the answering machine from Peter's room, you see a whole lot of pictures, and they're pretty much, a lot of them are like pretty much Peter at a young age, Peter with like glasses, my Uncle Ben and like a 14-year-old Peter. But then I know, like, in the room right before the answering machine, you clearly see Peter as a baby and his mother and father, and his dad looks exactly like Peter, but he looks older. And you see a wedding photo of, I think it's Aunt May and Uncle Ben, but it could be his parents. And you see, you can, like, it's not even blurry. You can actually see a lot of this, like, really well. You can tell they, like, by computer, they digitized the photos, the drawn images, into the panoramic shot. Because as the angles were changing, when it was changing into the different rooms, it was harder to see, but when you pause it, you can see, like, it's clear as day. So I thought that was really, really nice. I mean, that's not even for the episode. That's kind of like for, like, tech fans. But it was, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. I'll be honest. but as I was saying, with the dark tones, you know, definitely it has to be said that there's a lot of black and a lot of dark color tones.
Oh, this again.
but honestly, I mean, can you say that's not true with this arc, with everything that happens in this arc, with the black suit, yeah, the black hat?
I think a lot of stuff happens at night. I think if you were to say that in the next episode, because of like the backgrounds in that one, I would kind of follow you. I'll kind of back you up on that. But I mean, like for here, like I think it's just a fight at night. But you know, talk about it if you want to.
Yeah, but it is also, you know, when I talk about Dark Tones, I'm talking how the animation sort of helps towards the dark tones of the arc itself, which is, you know, I mean, you have Aunt May having a heart attack, you have Peter losing control to the suit, you have Eddie losing his mind.
Well, I think one instance I would back you up on that is like in the end, and I wrote this in my review, but when Peter at the end sees the newspaper and he, like, you know, the suit must have been used in my body. But when he thinks, quote unquote, he says, "Who cares? I still got paid for the photos. Six are put down. You know what's the difference?" The left side of his face is like heavily shattered. And now this is going to sound BS, but this is actually pretty true. Like the left has always been seen as, like, you know, sort of like the dark side, the devil side. You know, back in you know, the witch hunting days, the left side was always seen, like, if you were left handed, you would have been chased down for, like, you know, devil, you know, witchcraft and devilry and everything. And if you think of the villain Two-Face, the left side of his face is scarred. And it's not overt, but you can't read into it and catch it like that. So I thought that way, the darkening shade of his face was a way to kind of reinterpret what was going on in the context of the story. So that, in that instance, I'll agree with you. But in terms of the overall episode, I don't really see it.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the story. I mean, in past episodes, you've heard us talk about people's, you know, costumes and that stuff, but because we have all reoccurring characters in this episode, we really don't have much to talk about as far as characters and their history, but we do have something to talk about in the Sinister Six, which is a longtime Spider-Man concept. I believe they first appeared, if I bring up my notes, in, was it Amazing Spider-Man Annual Number 1, 1964?
Correct.
They were organized by Dr. Octopus, and so now for, and there's been several. I mean, Sandman's led one. There's been the Sinister 12. There's the supposed Sinister 666. That's
Sinister Syndicates. If you read Spider-Man Unlimited number 9, Sinister 7, which sucks. It really sucks. Yeah, there's a lot of these groupings, but they actually a lot of them do have like a common members. Like there's always like at least one member, I think, from the original team that's on another team, I think.
Yeah, that's the members: Dr. Octopus, Electro, Kraven, Mysterio, Sandman, Vulture, Scorpion, Shocker, Lizard, Hobgoblin 4, Hydro Man, and Venom. But the original were Dr. Octopus. Let me just look up the Vulture, Electro, Kraven the Hunter, Mysterio, and Sandman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, because those are like the villains that have appeared in by that time, you know, besides the Green Goblin and the Tinker and shit like that. But yeah, it's interesting because every time I see the animated Sinister Six, they never have the original villains. They never have the original members. It's always like here you have the Shocker. In the 90s show, you had Shocker. I think, like,
I'm trying to think. I mean, this one you had the ones that weren't there were Shocker and the Rhino.
Rhino.
What they didn't have was Mysterio and Kraven.
Yeah, and they appear. I think they actually get that right in the next season.
Yeah,
because Shocker.
Well, Shocker leaves, and was
Doc Ock is missing, but for a specific reason, which we
won't get into. But I'm trying to think. Because Mysterio, who else leaves? They have Electro, they have Rhino, they have Sandman, they have Mysterio and Kraven. Well, it is Dr. Octopus that's missing, but there's a reason for that. We won't get into that. Actually, my favorite version is actually the Sinister 12, for obvious reasons. It's part of the Marvel Knights Spider-Man run that happened in 2004.
The one that had Black Cat in it.
Yeah, but, you know, the ending to it, I thought, because, again, that was the one that was formed by Norman Osborn, where they Black Cat and Spider-Man had to break him out of jail. And then you just had that awesome fight at the end where, you know, Spider-Man goes to chase down the Green Goblin. But before, you know, Black Cat and Spider-Man, they send him down. Then all their friends come and help him. And you have Captain America. You have Iron Man. You have Ben Grimm. It's just so freaking awesome.
I liked it. I kind of thought that both of them... I thought both of them were a little bit of a Deus Ex. And that both sides, the good and evil spectrum, come at the exact right moment. But it was still kind of fun. I remember when I first read it. It's a holy crap moment. I was like, holy crap, look at all these guys. But they're fun. I like... I don't really have a preference on the Sinister Six. I actually like this interpretation a lot, because these guys really do kind of form like almost like with efficiency, but they still have their personality quirks. So I like especially when during the fight where Shocker's like, you know, get out of my way, I don't want to take out another member of our team, and Doc's telling this guy to do this and this guy to do that. I thought this one worked pretty well for what it was.
Moving on from that. We did talk about the fight. You know, do you want to go more in depth into the fight, Don?
I remember our great pal George Raymond saying that he, like, despite the fact that he hates his show because. No.
Okay. Now. Oh. Wow. Wow. Don.
He loves the show.
refrain statement. Okay, you know better than that.
Okay. All right. Despite not watching the show, that's gonna be a blooper, man. He said he did catch this episode's fight scene. He said that this was one where he really thought that this is how Spider-Man fights in the comic books. And it's funny since that this is a mind control symbiote version. I like the fight. I liked how innovative everything got. So, like, you see him like shooting webs through Sandman's hole, the hole in his chest, I should say. You see him just like using each villain's strengths against him, like Electro and Rhino and Shocker and Rhino. You see, like, I just thought everything was very ingenuitive, and it was just fun. It was just really fun to watch, like, getting into specifics. Like the one-on-one fight, the one-on-one aspect of the team fight was really cool. What did you think?
I found it absolutely incredible. You know, the first one was fun, them just wailing on him. Not that you like to see Spider-Man get wailed on, but it was, you know, obviously, you know, first time he meets them when he's at, we might as well say it now, when he's in control of the suit, you know, he really gets, like, thrown around. But the second time where the suit has control and it's, like, own natural reflexes, I mean, it's just a badass, and it's just action all the way through, and just so freaking awesome.
Well, you know, that's the thing that kind of, like, I kind of questioned, because, yeah, I agree with you, but when he's in control of the suit, he doesn't have much chance against the Six, or at least he gets beat up really quickly. But when...
And the Yankees win the pennant!
Yeah. But when the suitcase takes over... He doesn't automatically start winning. In fact, he is beat up still, like, when he first gets there. It's only until, like, the very end, I think, after a while, he learns the strengths and weaknesses of the villains he's fighting. Then he starts to take over. And I kind of have a problem with him immediately trying to kill Dr. Octopus, because that came out of nowhere so quickly that if you're trying to do the idea of Spider-Man's going bad, then why didn't he try to do that with the other villains after a while? But that's, I think that's more of a storyline thing, but... It was cool for it was really cool because I don't know if Peter wouldn't fight like that with his own volition, but it was just fun to watch nonetheless.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying. Since we talked about it, let's move on to another talking point. Let's talk about Peter losing control to the suit. You know, this is what we started to see this in the last episode, and we're seeing it really in this episode of the suit taking over Peter. And when you hear Peter talk like, what's it matter? You know, we wanted to fight the Sinister Six away. We got money for the pictures. That's the suit talking. And you can see the suit slowly taking over his body.
Yeah. Which again is, independent from the comic books, because Basically, him running around with the suit was from the comics, which was inferred, but not really, in the movie in the 90s show. But this one was more obvious here, and I thought it was pretty cool. Also, his suit was getting darker. And, you know, like what we said last time, it was, I thought it was just a black clothes swap. This one is more designy, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I thought that was pretty cool as well. What did you think?
Well, I love the fact that he's losing control of the suit. I love the fact that it's slowly taking him over and what it's going to lead to. I think it really shows the sort of, I don't want to say villainous nature, but it, you know, it's just great setup for what's going to come. You know, and we all know what's going to come.
You mean the next episode?
Yeah, but basically, I think it shows the redeeming values of Peter in the fact that when he hears about Aunt May, you know, he immediately, you know, the fact of really who he is comes out.
That's interesting to say because not to really talk too much about the next episode, but when you think about that, yeah, he never does turn his back on Aunt May, like ever. And that's a good point that his true persona comes out only when he feels that the ones he cares about are threatened, or when he feels threatened. Like, remember when he got a call from Jonah, who was trying to tell him about what happened to his aunt, and he's like, oh, Jonah trying to yell at me for not taking pictures. When Peter feels threatened, the symbiote takes on that anger, or maybe when the symbiote's host feels threatened, and that's actually an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah.
You'll see that a lot more in the next episode.
Yeah. And speaking of losing control, our final talking point is actually about Eddie. How he's becoming crazier and crazier and crazier, and how it fits with the rest of the series. And with that being said, I have one small question. How the hell does he not figure out he's freaking Spider-Man?
Really?
I'm sorry. I have to ask this question. I do have to ask this. I mean, he's supposed to be his big brother. He's supposed to be one of his best friends. He should know Peter better than that. Why would Peter not call the cops?
Well, I don't think Eddie has a good reason to think he's Spider-Man. I will say that he does throw under the bus pretty quickly. He's like, you know, this is who you are, Peter. I mean, really? Like, you've known, he tells Mary Jane he knows him so well. Then you would think that if they're so close, why doesn't Eddie just go up and say, what's going on? I want to help you, but if you want to push me away, then I'll be mad at you. But he just like, immediately just like forgets about him. And I'm not even gonna hide it. I'm gonna have so many problems with this whole Eddie thing because
doesn't make sense.
No, you're right. Some of it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
I mean, does anybody do actually know that, you know, the reason he's taking pictures is to help his aunt?
Betty.
Maybe. I mean, that's always something that made everyone like, why don't you just tell them the reason I need this job is to help my aunt? You know, it's like me. I want to get a job because I want to help my mother, and I'll be completely honest about that. I don't get it. I want to go all Jim Carrey and go, the truth, the truth, the truth shall set you free.
That's a good.
You were underage in a binding contract. I'm sorry. I'm continuing the quote.
The movie references.
Yeah.
Well, here's my.
Which, by the way, if you can guess the movie, 2 points.
Liar. I saw that. I actually saw that on my 8th birthday. But here's my thing. In some ways, it's very revealing of his character because he gives this whole speech to Peter about, you know, this is who you are. You're a user. You know, if you cared about anybody, you would stop. But I don't think you care about anybody. And then he goes and does the exact same thing to Mary Jane. The exact same thing. And what does that say about this guy? Does he see something about Peter that he doesn't like about himself? Does he see something about Peter that he hates so he tries to show Peter? Like, because here's the thing. Eddie, I said this at the very beginning of our show. Like, on the first couple episodes, Eddie is supposed to be initially a good guy. And I don't buy that his anger is, like, driving him crazy. That, to me, I think it was just, like, kind of, like, just making it way too fast. And I, it's something I've never really wrapped my head around, like, even to this day. I don't really know the deal. And I'm hoping that going over these episodes, we can kind of solve what the intention is for this character.
Well, I think I know it right off the bat, and it's the fact that he's no longer needed. You know, for the longest time, Peter and Gwen, you know, he was their protector. You know, he looked after them. When the other kids would pick on him, you know, big brother Eddie Brock would come in and, you know, knock some head together. And now Peter's off on his own, Gwen too, but especially Peter, he's off his own. He has a job, you know, he's taking pictures for the Bugle. He's somewhat famous to an extent for taking those pictures. He doesn't need Eddie's help in fending off Flash or Kong or any of the other bullies anymore.
Well, are you saying that, like, Eddie is feeling resentful because Peter is, like, moving on? Because, first of all, how close are these guys? Because it's implied that they first see each other when they meet and get the job at Connor's office or Connor's lab. So how close are they really? Second of all, I mean, I don't think Eddie really cares that Peter has a job, or like it's the way.
But
it's how
if
he
you're
going to
take
job.
This episode for what he says on the bike, that apparently they were really close to the point to where they were brother, almost like brothers.
Well, we're taking it not from this episode, but from what Eddie says. Remember,
yeah,
because this is the same guy who thinks that Peter Parker is scum. We know what Peter Parker does,
but
so
we don't hear
by,
by definition,
we can't take anything he says. He's what you call an unreliable narrator when he's giving exposition. Because I'm sure that the whole parents dying thing was true, but like him being taking care of Peter, I'm now questioning how much that was real, how much of that was, you know, in his own head. Like, I really am.
Do you feel he's starting to become somewhat like the ultimate version of Eddie?
Well, no, because that one had different reasons for going after Peter. He went after Peter in the Ultimate Comics because Peter tried to destroy the last project that their fathers worked on, I think. And this one is doing it for what he thinks are ethical and moral reasons. Or at least that's why he's upset.
Okay. Oh, well, I was just asking because if you remember when Eddie Brock first comes into the Ultimate universe, you know, they become very fast friends.
Well, it's about that brotherly bond about how they're both science geeks, and they both are sons of their fathers, and that they're interested in their father's work. They had a bond like that. This one, they obviously know each other for a long time, and they have a closer relationship, I think. But with Eddie in this version, I don't know. I'm not trying to say this is a bad thing. I don't literally know, because it is such a jump from. You know, I'm over it, just kind of back off. And now, oh, this is who you are. You take pictures when no one else is looking. I mean, seriously, I think that they could have done a better job than that. Or at least, because everything else here is so, like, kind of, like, believable. Like that little scene where Peter says, oh, you know, oh, I'll get up and, you know, solve everything later. I thought that was pretty cool, because it was just something that is a natural thing for a guy to do. So for Eddie to, like, kind of, like, just get mad and say, oh, this is who you are, and then, like, take Mary Jane out on a killer joyride and be, like, all, you know, like you know, oh, and there's this little funny accident. Like, I know, I get that the guy's mad. I get the guy's bitter. But how far is he willing to go with this? If he just hates Peter, if this is the same guy who tackles Electro and the Lizard, why doesn't he either just confront Peter about it and, like, ask him about it, or just leave him alone? I mean, he's acting like a tool. And I know that Eddie Brock is not supposed to be like a great guy in the greater mythology, but I think that it's they're getting their wires crossed, in my opinion. Do you agree, Yasir?
To an extent, yeah, I agree. But I do think that we've had some explanation to it. So I think overall that's what we said. Let's move on to favorite lines. Don, do you have any favorite lines?
I have one, because I know you already have it, and then you have more than one, so I'll just say this one. Pull you up from under the rug. When Spider-Man first sees the Sinister Six and the majority of his villains, his first reaction are, oh, only six? What happened? Lizard and Gobby got Knicks tickets? I thought that was a great line.
Yeah, actually, my favorite one said, first one though, hey, Rhino, I knew there wasn't prison wide enough to hold you. Wide. Ha ha. Very funny. Wow, I knew they taught trade in prison, but a sense of humor? That's, I'm sorry, that's good. And then you, of course, have any last words, Arachnid? A humana, humana, humana comes to mind.
Well, also, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the Jazzy Gianni's theater show in the background. Because, yeah, obviously, that's a reference to John Romita Sr., who, you know, and when Stanley...
Oh, yeah, I was trying to, because I knew it was probably a reference to something. I watched it over and over because I kept saying, okay, I know this theater is a reference to something. And what was it again?
It was Jazzy Gianni, which basically correlates to Jazzy Johnny, which was how Stanley would credit John Romita Sr. when they were both doing Amazing Spider-Man back in the 60s.
Okay. Well, you gotta remember, that's probably my weak point in mythology, so I wouldn't know that. So, but learning about that, yeah, that's a very, very funny reference. So, but since you took my So Only Six, the Lizards and Goblin Have Nick Tickets line, I will insert Mary Jane's line about Peter, which I just, you know what, I think it shows her character off so well. Even though Eddie's telling her all this stuff that Peter's doing, it's like, yeah, he made mistakes, but you know what? He's more man than you'll ever be. And I'm like, hell yeah, girl! Tell him!
Of course you were. Well,
preach, sister, preach!
I think that when I was listening to that, like, for the podcast, I kind of caught something, because she said her literal words are, he's twice the man you'll ever be. Ooh. As in, you know, two men. Also...
Oh, and I get knocked for earlier comments. Wow!
No! Oh, no! I mean... Okay.
You just said that! That's what you just said!
No, but that's not what I mean, for God's sake. I mean to say that... Okay, in the comics, Mary Jane knows Peter Spider-Man from the very beginning.
Okay.
So... If you use that explanation,
yeah. I get what you're saying. You just weren't clear on that, and I obviously, but very much.
You obviously, yes.
you got to remember who you're dealing with, Don.
I must have forgotten.
But you want to know what? Yeah, I can see that, and I would absolutely agree with that. You know, she obviously knows something.
Well, one more thing on that. When you consider Venom's first appearance, who did he go after? Like, to get to Spider-Man, to get to Peter Parker, who did he go after?
Mary Jane.
So, ha-ha, it all adds up.
Yep.
It all comes back together.
So, do you have a final rating you want to give this episode?
You know, I don't... In my written review, I gave it a 4.5. And Crazy Chris disagreed with me. But I don't see anything wrong with this episode at all. I don't like the animation era where Peter, like, doesn't really care until Mary Jane says, you know, she's in the hospital. Like after she says, your aunt had a heart attack. She's okay, but she's in the hospital. Peter doesn't react until she says she's in the hospital, and that kind of is really stupid. But, like, that doesn't really influence the episode. I don't see any reason not to give this a 5, because the animation was great, the action was great, characters were great, the writing was great. What's not to like about it? 5 out of 5.
I'll give it a 4.5. I really just have issue with the whole... The Hail Eddie Brock situation, I think, you know, they've shown him to be smart enough and to know Peter enough that he should know that Peter... There's no reason for Peter to call the cops, and maybe he should start questioning that Peter is Spider-Man, but, you know, understandably why they don't, but still... It just seems to me that he should be able, or hell, even Gwen, should be able to piece sort of puzzle pieces together of, like, well, why wouldn't he call the cops? But,
well, no, because Gwen doesn't know anything. She didn't know what was going on with Harry until the very last second, and then she just still didn't know much. I wouldn't expect Gwen to know much, just on how
she
finds out.
But she does know that he takes pictures of Spider-Man.
Well, everybody knows that. I mean, Aunt May knows that. I see what you're saying about Eddie. And I would agree with that, but that kind of plays into the next episodes, like, heavier, like, especially the season finale. I actually have kind of problems about that, but they impacted that episode more because they are compounded. And really, the crux of this episode is the Sinister Six. Like, that's the main plot, even though the grueling subplot is growing. The main plot is the Sinister Six, and for that, I really liked it.
it's like I said, you know, all that's really just set up for the next couple episodes. But yeah, the main plot is the Sinister Six, which is really mostly all it is just one big awesome fight.
At the very end. Were there any parts in particular that you liked about the fight? Like, I don't think we actually talked about it that much besides the animation. Like, any kind of moments or anything?
Yeah, because you were breaking up, and so I had to fix it. But to peel back the fourth wall. But I love the flips. I love the fluidity of it. I love him taking knocking out the vulture, taking it, I guess what was it, his foot claw, and using it to take out the Shocker.
Yeah.
I just thought that was nice.
Yeah, I agree. I liked how Vulture was like, what the? And he like knocks him out, like yanking off his like thing on his head.
Yeah.
And then throwing him into like a giant web. I loved how he shot webs right through the hole in Sandman's chest. I love how he was on the ground, was like kneeling, webbed down. Like, I think it was Shocker and Electro, or something like that. And I like, threw him on another guy. I loved how like there was one point where he like jumped down, web swung, and his web line was cut as he was like really low to the ground. And like I just like the animation just sold this.
Yeah,
I love the whole thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So as we know, we plug our stuff and our friends. So do you want to plug your other podcast first, Don?
ASM Classics with Bertoni and John Wilson. That's a fun show. We just recorded, like I think last week, the big Green Goblin episode with a certain Mr. Crawlspace himself, Brad Douglas. So check that out, please. Clone Saga Chronicles, did with Bertoni also, and Zach Dusty Joyner, a sort of other friends, Jason Gerard, B-Dog. And we over the 90s Clone Saga, and that's a lot of fun. Also, please check out my DeviantArt page.
Yes. Can you tell them where the DeviantArt is? Not DeviantArt, but your DeviantArt page.
DonaldMark@DeviantArt.com. Gerard's actually gotten on me. Where is your stuff? Because I actually haven't done much since. Even though school's out, I've been busy with work and car stuff and everything. But I should be updating soon. There's some new stuff like maybe a month ago. So keep an eye on that. I'm not gonna let it go dead. I swear. I should be having stuff up real quick.
And I have two podcasts. Well, I have four podcasts. Two, and two new ones. I have my Thomas's Prerogative, which I do for the Shaft podcast. That's out usually every Monday. I've been having some tough time recently, and so it seems like it's been every other week. But I'm hopefully going to get back onto schedule of doing it every week. I've been busy with preparation for something else I'll talk about in a second. I have my Tokyo SOS podcast. Which is a Godzilla review podcast, which I do with my friend Jesse Garrett. Right now, episode 4 is out, in which we have our special guests, Scott H. Gardner and Chris Honeywell from 22 Freaks. That's out right now, and we're actually going to record episode 5 tomorrow, in which that we cover Godzilla versus King Kong, which I was watching that today. I couldn't stop laughing. I mean, it's just like, you know, electricity could stop Godzilla. Yeah, because it works so well in the first frickin' film.
When did this movie come out?
It came out in the early 1960s, I believe.
Hmm.
I'm going just off the top of my head. It wasn't that far away from the first film. Okay. It was less than 10 years, but my two new podcasts, I have Hexcast. Hexcast is a podcast. You hear Donald Mark here laughing. Hexcast is a podcast in which me and my friend Lori Thomas are reviewing Jim Balance Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, which is a comic book that both me and Lori feel doesn't get a lot of respect, basically because people just want to call it a porn comic. It's not. We're not going to get to
it. It really is.
No, we're not getting to this discussion. This is not the proper time and place, Don. But, you know, we feel that way. And basically just go to www.hexcast@podomatic.com. Podomatic.com, or should I say search Hexcast on Podomatic. Just the same thing with Tokyo SOS. All my podcasts are on Podomatic. So search that out. And the other new one is Cape and Feathers. We will be actually recording our first episode this Friday, which I'm going to be doing with Walter Bowman, Stella, and Don was going to be on it, but he can't anymore, so he's having his replacement, Logan Daniels, and my good friend Jesse Garrett are all going to be on it, and we're basically going to be talking about the Justice League cartoon, so check that out. Next episode, we'll have the website address up for you. It's probably going to be where Walter has his burning comics, so that's our podcast. We, of course, like we said, we plug our friends. We have Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, Gene Marquis and Chris Stanton's Shaft podcast, the Major Spoilers podcast, along with the Critical Hit podcast, Clone Saga Chronicle, Batgirl Chronicles, Kaiju Cast, Nostalgia Critic, 2-in-1 Showcase, 2-2 Freaks, G.J. Thomas's Comic Cavalcade. Check them all out.
DJ Comics Cavalcade. By Thomas DJ.
Okay. So that's it for this episode. Do you want to tell them where they can find the show, Don, and its forms?
You can find the show at the Crawl Space, SpidermanCrawlSpace.com. You can find the show also at Spectacular Ways Podcast at Podomatic.com. And please click on our forums and give us feedback at thecomicforums.com. Just click on that, scroll down, and find Spectacular Webs Podcast.
And remember, you can leave email and iTunes reviews. You can email the show at www.spectacularwebspodcast. Oh, excuse me. My many podcasts are mixing me up. www.spectacularwebs@yahoo.com. So, until next time, Spider-Man fans, stay spectacular.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Comics Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.